Triple R.
Triple R is where you're at. And today, for Who, What, Where, When, Why, I'm keen to unpick the ethics and thinking that underpins the relationship between corporations, public institutions, and the socially conscious citizen. Anthony Lowenstein is the author of last year's Prophets of Doom, which we talked about on this show. He's a journalist, activist, and fierce advocate, amongst other things, of the moral imperative of a boycott against Israeli institutions. Welcome back to Triple R, Anthony Lowenstein.
Thanks for having me on. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Well, my voice is, I'm hoping that it's going to last throughout this interview, to be honest. I wanted to begin by asking you, Anthony, about corporate sponsorship. The Sydney Biennale is kind of entrenched in a battle at the moment about Transfield, a major sponsor of the event and a company used by the Australian federal government to handle refugee services.
Yes.
Can you talk a bit about Transfield and their relationship with the Biennale?
Transfield's a company that most people haven't heard of. It's been around for many years. It does offer infrastructure and various other works. And last year, during the Labor government, before Labor lost, they won a contract to do some management on Nauru. The Abbott government won in September, and just yesterday, in fact, there was an announcement that Transfield won a $1.2 billion contract to manage various services on Manus Island and Nauru. What you're really seeing here, I think, is in some ways an unsurprising development in the reality of corporations mixing with offshore detention. And often many of these companies, such as G4S, such as Serco, such as Transfield, like to see themselves not just as organisations like that. They like to see themselves also as humanitarian, as benign. And by sponsoring and having involvement in things like the Biennale, which is a very large event in Sydney and has been going on for many years, they hope with the agreement and arrangement of the Biennale itself that they can not just be seen as an organisation that is profiting from misery on Manus Island and Nauru, but they're actually assisting the arts. And this has really been a problem in some ways self-evidently, because Transfield is profiting from situations, as we've just seen the last week on Manus Island, and Transfield, I should clarify, is taking over the contract this week. G4S, the British multinational, which is the largest security company in the world, has been managing it for a number of months, and as we saw last week, in a disastrous fashion, one man was killed, many were injured, and the issue I think that really comes to it here is, do arts events, do corporate events, do events that are attempting to provide entertainment and challenging ideas, should they receive money from organisations such as Transfield? And I would argue they should not.
Obviously, I'd actually love to talk to you a little bit about Transfield taking over on Manus Island. I'm hoping a lot of questions will be asked about the staff that are on Manus Island and whether Transfield will just be renewing the same people that seem to be part of the problem on Manus Island. I'm sure that's a question that's going to, well, hopefully be asked by our media in this country. But getting back to what we're talking about, obviously Transfield is a crucial part of what, you know, you refer to in an article that you wrote as the supply chain that makes the detention industry work. But if arts organisations should refuse to accept money from Transfield on that basis, doesn't it follow that federal government funding is, at this point in time, even more tainted? Where should an ethically conscious organisation draw the line? Because if, you know, if we're talking about kind of federal funding of arts events and arts institutions, you're talking about a lot of money.
Absolutely, and there's no doubt that there is a serious ethical and moral question there. One of the interesting things about Australia compared to, for example, the US, and I've spent time over there, is that many arts events, in fact, most arts events, cultural events, are not sponsored by the state. They're sponsored by private organisations or philanthropic groups. And I'm not for a second suggesting that in itself is wonderful either. There are clearly many problems with huge US multinationals supporting orchestras and various artistic events. This is also deeply problematic. The reality is that the Biennale and many other events have been challenged on their association with Transfield and others, and their response has been twofold. One, it says, yes, this is potentially difficult for us. We're aware that we would like to maybe not receive money from organisations like that. However, money is tight. This is a simple reality in Australia at the moment. We need the money. That's one argument. And the second argument is that if artists or potential participants boycott, and there's been a call by a number of artists involved in the Biennale to boycott, to sort of say the Biennale almost needs to be taught a lesson and Transfield needs to be seen as completely unacceptable as a sponsor of the Biennale event. The Biennale says, well, a boycott misses the point. If you want to have a debate, sure, have a discussion, have a debate within the tent of the Biennale. In other words, they want to co-opt that discussion. And in fact, there is a deep connection between members of the board of Transfield and members of the board of the Biennale. There is an intimate relationship there, and although Transfield's involvement was known last year, it's been a sponsor for a number of years, the Transfield contract with the Australian government only massively increased this year since the Abbott government has come in. There's no doubt that finding sort of clean money, so to speak, for arts events or any cultural events is difficult, and I have no simple answer how to do that. One could argue that only using private money that is vetted, so to speak, is a viable option. But how do you actually do that? How does any organisation vet where an individual's money comes from? Arguably, you can't, really.
You get to the point, though, that you scratch the surface of many organisations, and whether through it's what they invest their money into, you're bound to find something that, you know, is evil.
Undeniably true. And I guess ultimately it's really about making ethical decisions. Firstly, it's about public awareness. How many people in Australia or in Sydney, especially where the Biennale is mainly taking place, are even aware that Transfield, with its contracts with the Australian government on Nauru and Manus Island, was sponsoring? Although Transfield's logo is not hidden, a lot of people don't even know Transfield has any involvement with the Australian government on Manus Island and Nauru. For that matter, most Australians aren't aware of the fact that G4S and Serco run detention centres for profit. Although it's now in the press in the last week since the tragedy on Manus Island in PNG, most Australians, and I've been speaking about my book Prophets of Doom now for more than half a year, I find that most Australians aren't aware that the Australian government, which started under the Howard government, continued under Labor, and now it's continued under the Liberal coalition under Abbott, are aware of the fact that these corporations, and there are many of them, both local and international, are making a profit from essentially ever-expanding detention centres to punish and house and imprison asylum seekers. I have no simple answer how to deal with the ethical amount of taking money from organisations, except to say public awareness is a pretty damn good start. And ultimately, most people need to be, I think, made uncomfortable as an organisation if they are taking money from companies such as Transfield, such as Serco, such as G4S. Not all corporations are evil. Not all corporations are awful. There are some that are far better than others, frankly. And particularly in the context of asylum seeker policy in the last, 15, 20 years, and this even more so in the last year, since offshore processing was expanded under Labor and now deepened under the coalition, I think it's a legitimate point to say, as an artist, as a writer, as a citizen, as someone who's concerned about human rights, do we want to visit and be involved with an organisation, the Biennale, which claims to be open and free and transparent, that is taking money from such corporations?
I did want to clarify to you, you said at the start we were talking about kind of artists who are calling for boycotts of the Biennale, but it is also refugee organisations and groups, including a great organisation that I think runs out of here in Melbourne, Rise, who have called for artists and consumers to boycott the Biennale. Is there a danger with a protest like this, though, that the very reason for the boycott gets lost in the information about how artists feel or how the board feels or how, in fact, Transfield feels about this kind of protest?
Look, there's a danger in it. I suppose it very much depends on how the message has got out. And although there has been some mainstream media coverage, a lot of it has been online, social media, Twitter, Facebook, etc. I note that I just saw yesterday that an event for the Biennale in Melbourne has been cancelled due to the apparent fear of a mass protest because of the Biennale's connection with Transfield. Now, some would argue that completely misses the point. Some would say that a boycott actually doesn't achieve anything, that having the events, having a protest, having a discussion about it is better. Personally speaking, as someone who has spent a lot of time talking about BDS, boycott, divestment, sanction against Israel because of its oppression of the Palestinians, boycotts, particularly in that case, are called by Palestinians themselves in Palestine. The Biennale boycott is coming from a range of groups, including artists who are involved in the Biennale and, as you rightly say, refugee groups. Rise in Melbourne is one of the best, in my view, groups in the country because it's run and controlled by former refugees themselves, many of whom, including its head, Ramesh Fernandez, was in immigration detention himself during the Howard years. So there is a lived experience. Now, there are other groups who aren't calling for a boycott, and I think it's fair to say the events are going to go ahead. But it's clear that certain artists are going to pull out. There's going to be protest. Now, as for the idea of kind of a collective response by artists to sponsorship for Transfield, that's clearly something I think that the artists need to decide for themselves, and that's not really for me to say. Personally speaking, the fact that in the space of really 3 or 4 weeks since this issue got a lot of mainstream coverage, there's been a lot of discussion about this, and not just online, but also on the ABC, Fairfax, Press, etc. It raises the issue. It makes an organisation like the Biennale, and Transfield for that matter, under the spotlight to say, what are these companies doing? What is their responsibility? Does the public feel comfortable with that kind of association? And although this year the relationship between Transfield and the Biennale is guaranteed to continue, what happens next time? Does Transfield continue to sponsor them? Does the Biennale feel comfortable as an organisation taking money from a company that, as I said just yesterday, now has a $1.2 billion contract with the government?
Do you feel, you mentioned social media there, do you feel that the sort of face of consumer boycotts has changed with the advent of social media and the way that it, you know, can connect around the world so much more easily than we've seen ever before?
Definitely. I mean, the gatekeeper has changed. The gatekeeper arguably has fallen away. I think one of the fascinating things about the boycott, divestment, sanction movement against Israel, and we just saw, as some listeners will be aware, the big campaign around SodaStream. For those who don't know, I'll give a very brief summary. Scarlett Johansson, the Hollywood actress, partnered up with SodaStream, which is like a fizzy seltzer drink company. They have a factory in the occupied West Bank employing Arabs and Israelis, but they're working on occupied territory. It's an illegal settlement. And there was a huge campaign to put pressure on Johansson to pull out of that, to not support SodaStream. And she was also at the same time being a spokesperson for Oxfam, talking about human rights around the world. Huge outcry, which had started on social media, developed and then moved into the mainstream press. Johansson made a decision to pull out of being involved with Oxfam and siding with SodaStream, which said a lot about her ethics and her politics. The effect of that has been that SodaStream's share price has dived. Its ability to get positive mainstream traction has dived. The company's not about to go under tomorrow, but social media was vital and central to that. And closer to home with the Biennale, exactly the same thing, Michelle. There was initially a social media campaign. There was no mainstream media coverage. There was a number of activists, artists, and visual arts teachers in Sydney who had some concern of Transfield's involvement. They started a social media campaign. It got picked up by various people. A number of journalists, myself and others, wrote about it in the mainstream press. And now it's become an issue to the point where there are the head of the MCA up here in Sydney, the Museum of Contemporary Art, is being asked about her involvement with Transfield and, for that matter, whether the Biennale and Transfield should have a relationship. The head of the Biennale themselves have been questioned by various journalists. Now, this in itself launches and causes discussion. Social media is vital in that. And I think it's also vital because it doesn't anymore rely on the hope that some mainstream journalist might write a story about this issue, because if they don't, then you're locked out of the debate. That's now changed. And too often, I think the problem is the mainstream media is playing catch-up rather than actually running the stories themselves.
Is there also sometimes, you get the feeling, particularly around social media, that there is a bit of fatigue about whatever issue or product or event of the day is the latest to be singled out for boycott or protest? Is there kind of a danger in that sort of churn too? Because I'm kind of interested in protest in Australia at the moment. You know, right around Australia, state governments are introducing laws intended to stifle debate and protest. You know, I talked earlier on in the show about Move On powers in Victoria, but then we talked about what's happening in Queensland with G20 and the laws that are being changed there, which are just sweeping and you know, are kind of, you scratch your head about how people are actually going to live in Brisbane in November when this massive meeting happens. Do you think though, that there is this sort of danger that things just get churned and forgotten about?
Possibly. There's definitely no guarantee that won't happen, that people are either bombarded by so many calls for protests, boycotts, whatever it may be. That's true. And to some extent, various issues are going to be more responded to by certain individuals. I mean, the Biennale campaign, I think what's so interesting about it is that initially you would presume, and this would be correct, there'd be kind of refugee activists and progressive, I guess, artists who were concerned about the association between the Biennale and Transfield. But that's, I think, gone beyond that now. When you have mainstream organisations who are covering the issue, talking about the issue, raising those questions. And one of the things I think which is important about this particular campaign and one similar to it is that it really goes to the heart of saying, in a larger context, does Australia want, and do other Western companies want, or sorry, Western countries want, to have associations between corporations making a fortune profiting from misery, in my view, and arts events, or even do we feel comfortable with taxpayer dollars going to private corporations that are profiting from the misery of asylum seekers? One of the things I talk about in Prophets of Doom is that in so many areas, detention centres, aid, war, in the last 20 or 30 years, so many services that used to be run by the state are now run by private corporations. And that's not inherently by definition evil, but in so many cases, the services are not any better, accountability has been reduced, and the ethical moral question, I think, is very clear, because it essentially says, when it comes to, say, asylum seekers, that companies like Serco and G4S and Transfield, their records are appalling. And what's ironic is that this is not activists or journalists such as myself saying, this is often government reports, the ones who are hiring the corporations in the first place, putting out reports saying the behaviour, transparency of these corporations is terrible. Human rights abuses are terrible. The training of staff is terrible. And yet, despite that, they're still getting more and more contracts. And that, I think, really goes to the heart of a political crisis where it doesn't really matter who's in power in Canberra now or London or Washington. This is basically agreed by the major two-party systems that we have. There are some dissent. In Australia, the Greens do oppose, to their credit, detention centres run by private corporations, and they also oppose offshore detention. But the two major parties, Labor and Liberal, agree. I mean, Labor, let's not forget, was the one who established offshore processing in the last few years, and they hired these corporations. That, I think, is the problem here, that the political system is broken, and there needs to be other ways thought of to deal with those kind of associations between corporations and asylum seekers. And the Biennale is a great, in my view, case study in showing what that association looks like, and the attempt to try to kind of whitewash the behaviour of Transfield and G4S and Serco simply doesn't work and shouldn't work.
Thank you so much for your time this morning, Anthony Lowenstein. I'm very much enjoying your writing in The Guardian, as I've always enjoyed your writing on your website, which is anthonylowenstein.com. And do check out Prophets of Doom, which we did talk about last year on the show. It's a great book, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Anthony Lowenstein.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks a lot for your time. You're on Triple R.
Music is sound in melodic or harmonic combinations, whether produced by voice or instrument.
3RRR.
That's right.